Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Stephen Parks on why your congregation should join the Issues Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc., the Issues Etc. 300.
I'm introducing a bill to bring marriage equality to the state of New York. This is a civil rights issue.
You know what? I think that I believe that a marriage should be between a man and a woman. No offense to anybody out there, but that's how I was raised, and that's how I think that it should be between a man and a woman. Thank you.
Gee, well, why don't we blame Winston Churchill and FDR for focusing too narrowly on defeating the Nazis to the neglect of other issues?
Mormon bosoms burn at a higher centigrade than non-Mormon bosoms.
Southern Illinois truck drivers who love Issues, etc.
I remember the first time someone tried to explain the date of Easter to me. I was a little bit confused. Let's see, I think it's the first Sunday after the first full moon, after the vernal equinox. That's that time when the daylight is equal between night and day. If I'm not mistaken, on the spring side of the year, not the autumnal, but the vernal equinox. And if that isn't confusing enough, not all Christians celebrate Easter at exactly the same time. In fact, if you divide the church between East and West, according to its historic division, going all the way back to nearly 1000 AD, you will find Christians dividing over when Easter ought to be celebrated. So why is it that the Western Church will be celebrating Easter one Sunday and the Eastern Church on another Sunday, just as they did this year? We're going to talk about the Eastern and Western Church calendars and some of the differences it brought about, a difference in the way time is counted. Dr. Kent Burrison joins us here in this hour of Issues Etc. Thanks for tuning us in. It's Friday, April the 24th, and after our conversation with Dr. Burrison on the church calendars, Bishop N.T. Wright is going to be joining us to take a scholar's look at the resurrection of Christ. He's author of more than 40 books, but he's co-author of the new book, Jesus, the Final Days, What Really Happened. Bishop N.T. Wright in about a half hour here on Issues Etc. Dr. Kent Burrison is Assistant Professor of Systematic Theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis and a regular guest. Kent, welcome back.
Good to be here again.
Can you explain in a simple way why the Western Church celebrates Easter one Sunday and the Eastern Church another Sunday?
Well, it essentially amounts to a difference in terms of the calendars that are used. The Western Church went about reforming its calendrical dates in order to bring the entire, because of course at the time the church calendar and the secular calendar were one and the same, and the church determined along with the state the setup of the secular calendar. So in the 16th century, there were adjustments made to the calendar, and then adjustments were made actually earlier than that too, going back to the seventh century actually. Those adjustments in the 7th century and then subsequently in the 16th century are called the Gregorian reform of the calendar. And that Gregorian reform meant that they caught up the dates, so to speak, so that the solar calendar, the time period, the time frame, there was no leap day in February. And so you had to catch up the days, otherwise you midnight would be in the morning. And so they made those adjustments and altered the setup of the dates accordingly, and that meant that the Eastern Church, which followed the Julian calendar, which of course had been set up back in Roman times, they stuck with the Julian calendar. The West went with the Gregorian reforms, and that meant that the date of Easter potentially could shift between the two communions, between the East and the West.
Do they occasionally, I take it, do celebrate Easter on the same Sunday, but more often than not, probably not. Is that the way it works?
Yeah, that's correct. They tend not to be on the same Sunday, although I was just looking at an Eastern calendrical configuration, and next year they will be on the same day. In fact, for 2 years in sequence, 2010, 2011, they'll be on the same day, but that's rather unusual.
This isn't on the subject per se, but I imagine those listening to us are also at least passingly aware that the Eastern Western churches will also be celebrating Christmas per se on different days. Why is that? Because Christmas is not fixed to the moon at all, so why is that difference there?
Well, they actually do celebrate Christmas on the same day. There aren't any changes in date there. But the importance that's associated for the East and the West in terms of what is actually considered the central Christmas celebration, Epiphany or Christmas, that varies depending upon the emphasis that's put on any particular feast. So the Epiphany is, for them, in many ways, their Christmas celebration.
Are we looking at two sectors of the church here, generally speaking, West and East, that have been isolated from one another in some ways, theologically and historically, for the better part of 1,000 years?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, the two traditions since 1054, when the two churches, the Bishop of Rome and the Bishop of Constantinople, mutually excommunicated one another, since that day, and because of cultural developments, historical developments, especially historical developments in terms of who ruled in the East for centuries, the East was ruled by an emperor who had really no interaction with the Western world, and eventually, of course, the Arabs overrun the Eastern Empire, and from that point on, except for the Crusades, the interaction tends to be minimal, and so there's really no sort of cross-fertilization between the two parts of the church.
Is this more than an accident of history, Dr. Burrison? I know that there are things that kept the two sides of the church apart that had nothing to do with theology, but there certainly are some theological and some significant theological differences.
Oh, yes, no question. I mean, one of the key differences is the East's approach to the crucifixion of Christ and to the reality of sin. With regard to the nature of justification, that's what I meant by the cross. In the West, there's a very intentional focus on Paul's language of justification, the nature of what justification is. In the East, they really don't give a lot of attention to that. They talk more about theosis, the transformation of the individual within the light of God's redeeming work in Christ. And so there's a fundamental difference in terms of the orientation about what it means to be saved. And then secondly, you know, the doctrine of sin, particularly in the West, is shaped by controversies at the time of St. Augustine. St. Augustine and Pelagius, another theologian, debating about the extent of human sin, the nature of original sin. That debate never surfaces in the East. And so Eastern attention to what it means for us to be sinners is not really central to their whole conception theologically. And so it just doesn't operate to fundamentally like Lutherans would think, you know, in terms of confession of sin and us being bound to our sin. That's language that really doesn't surface in the Eastern part of the church.
So in that case, we're really talking about, without putting too fine a point on it, different doctrinal development. Is that a fair way of saying it?
Yeah, I mean, the emphases develop differently in terms of doctrine and teaching, and certain things just don't surface in the East. Likewise, certain things that surface in the East aren't as central in the West.
Okay, so when we find someone like Pope John Paul II or his successor, Pope Benedict XVI, through various symbolic means and some overt means, attempting to build a bridge to the patriarchate of the Eastern Church or to certain sectors of it and say maybe it's time to start talking again, that's a pretty monumental task of rapprochement, isn't it?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. I mean, even in the midst of the excommunications that took place in 1054, nonetheless, the East and the West do consider, for the most part, do consider themselves to be authentic expressions of the church's life. So from that vantage point, there's groundwork, as opposed to, let's say, the relationships between Reformed communions, like Lutheran and Episcopalian and Reformed, and Rome. Rome doesn't, in many ways at least, recognize us as being authentic churches. But with the East, they do. And so there's already a foundation for the kind of work that needs to go on. But the centuries of conflict, especially mission work, because part of the problem is that Rome has consistently, since 1054, sent missionaries into traditionally Eastern lands. And so you have roaming Eastern Rite Roman Catholic churches in those lands, like Bulgaria and Serbia and Russia. And that has been very problematic from the East side, because essentially Rome, by sending those missionaries, is saying your form of the Church Catholic is inadequate in our view, and therefore we need to send missionaries that represent what is the true and authentic representation of the Church. So, and all the theological issues that have to be discussed, and fundamentally, what is the position of the Bishop of Rome, which the East has always rejected his power and authority over the entire church. So there are very significant issues that would need to be addressed.
Well, when we come back from this break, we're going to talk about a few of those things as we talk about the difference between the Eastern and the Western Church. It's occasioned, of course, by a difference in the calendar this year of the celebration of Easter. Dr. Kent Burrison is our guest, assistant professor of systematic theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We'll talk a bit about apostolic succession, both the Western Church, the Roman Rite, and the Eastern Churches claim an authentic apostolic succession, but their lists don't read the same. So we'll talk about that, along with the supremacy of the Pope. And going back 1,000 years, that's where we'll be on the other side of the break. Why did they originally excommunicate one another in 1054? It's Friday, April the 24th, a little later this afternoon in our conversation. In fact, 10 minutes from now, Bishop N.T. Wright will join us to round off this second hour of the program. We'll be talking with him, a scholar's look at the resurrection of Christ. He's author of more than 40 books, but he's co-authored a new book called Jesus, the Final Days, What Really Happened. When we come back, 10 more minutes on the Eastern and Western Church calendars. Dr. Kent Burrison is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. Stay tuned.
Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
Are you looking for a Christ-centered, cross-focused church? Check out the new Find a Church page at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church. Are you tired of worship that's more about self-help than the Savior, the Christian rather than the Christ, and the Christ in you instead of Christ for you? It's not about you. It's about Jesus for you. Find a church near you, issuesetc.org. Click Find a Church.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Gloria Christi Lutheran, Greeley, Colorado. St. John's Lutheran, Rosemount, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Waltham, Minnesota. Trinity Lutheran, Fredericktown, Missouri. Zion Lutheran, Gravelton, Missouri. Christ the King Lutheran, Billings, Montana, Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee, and Zion Lutheran, Douglas, Wyoming. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Promote. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. Journal, issuesetc.org, and click Promote. The Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Kent Burrison is our guest, Assistant Professor of Systematic Theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. We're talking about the Eastern and Western church calendars and the other differences that persist between these two, I guess you could call them the two streams of Christianity on the planet today. One a bit larger and the other a bit smaller, but still no less significant. You had mentioned before the authority of the Pope, and this kind of takes us in a way kind of dovetailing back 1,000 years. What occasioned the mutual excommunications between East and West in 1054?
Well, it actually started already in the 8th and 9th centuries, the election of Charlemagne as and the coronation of Charlemagne as the emperor in the West, because the West had been essentially without an emperor for quite a few centuries. And Charlemagne's power meant that the Western popes no longer needed the support of the Eastern emperor. And that sort of began the downhill slide. In addition, the Pope declared his authority over both East and West. That had happened quite a bit earlier. And he regularly made efforts to embroil himself in controversies and issues that surfaced in the East. And so there was a debate about who should be the Bishop of Constantinople or the Patriarch of Constantinople in the 9th century. And he sided with one particular person. And because the East ultimately didn't elect that person, the other person in the debate actually declared the West to be heretical, and that declaration, he eventually became the patriarch. That declaration obviously angered the West, and that led to simmering conflict that then surfaced again in the 11th century in 1054, again because of a ruling that had taken place in the West, and one of the archbishops in the East accused the West of error, of heresy again, and this led to the Pope sending an ambassador to Constantinople, who was rejected, and as a result, both the Pope and the Patriarch decided to excommunicate one another. So it really was about political issues, you know, control, and who has the ultimate authority. Is it the Patriarch of Constantinople, or is it the Bishop of Rome?
What were the alleged errors that were charged there, or the heresies that were charged? Do we know?
At least in the first case in the 900s, it was the filioque, that is the procession of the Spirit from the Son, as well as the Father in the Nicene Creed. So the addition of "and the Son" was the fundamental thing in the 9th century. In the 11th century, it was a rule about celibacy that the Western Church had made, actually imposing clerical celibacy as a universal rule. So in the case of the Western Church, they said all priests have to be celibate. They cannot marry. The East, the Western Church, made that ruling. The East, of course, still had married priests, and do to this day. Only bishops in the Eastern Church are required to be celibate. So that was obviously a source of conflict, and making that a universal rule from the Eastern perspective, the Pope didn't have the power or the authority to do that because it contradicted church tradition. So,
okay, then let's talk about the issue of apostolic succession, because both the Western Church Roman, the sector of it, and the various forms of the Eastern Church, they all claim to have something called apostolic succession. First of all, what is that?
Well, apostolic succession, at least in the way that both Rome and the East would understand it, is the ability to trace the lineage of ordinations or consecrations of bishops all the way back to the apostles, so that you can find, for instance, in Rome, you can trace the lineage of bishops who have laid hands on their successors from Peter all the way down to present Pope Benedict. Same thing would be true in the East in regard to the particular sees in the East. So you can trace the laying out of hands of bishops in Constantinople, in Moscow, in Jerusalem, in Antioch, back to the original apostles who were the evangelists of those particular cities.
Okay, then the lists of the two, it would seem, cannot be identical to one another. Do they recognize one another's apostolicity?
Yes, actually, they do. I think my knowledge of the nature of the list is I've never actually examined that, but my guess is that the lists in the particular cities would be mutually recognized from that vantage point. At least they would have been in the fourth century. So the question is, you know, what are the relationships between the various sees, the preeminent sees, that is, the chief cities that guided early Christianity? And initially, those were Rome, Antioch, Alexandria, and Constantinople. And then Jerusalem's thrown in as a fifth a little bit later. So the relationship in terms of power and authority of those five patriarchies is critical to the whole question of mutual recognition. And they have always recognized one another as peers without equal, I guess, would be a way of saying it. In other words, all five patriarchies were, in a sense, considered on the same level. The problem is that in the 5th century, 6th century, the Bishop of Rome asserted his authority over the other four patriarchies. And that's the fundamental problem from the Eastern vantage point.
When we see someone, as I mentioned before, like Pope Benedict XVI, suggesting that there can be some kind of, better relations, if not perhaps some kind of a communion restored between East and West— would that come, in your opinion, with the string attached, I'm still Pope? You guys will still have to answer to me in some sense?
I would presume that would be the case. It's an interesting conundrum because fundamentally what you have going on here is who can properly interpret the development of church doctrine and church tradition, because both East and West would affirm West in particular affirmed the development of doctrine. So would the East, but the East would always construe the development of doctrine within the context of church councils. And the West, the Pope, has consistently upheld that the Pope has ultimate authority over a church council. So you have a fundamental disagreement about how doctrine is established within the church between East and West, and they'd have to resolve that issue before they could resolve the question of what is the place of the Pope in relationship to the other patriarchs.
Coming back to the calendar then, does it make a difference ultimately from our perspective when we or other Christians choose to celebrate significant feasts like Easter or the emphases that you mentioned before at the time around Christmas and Epiphany?
I mean, is there fundamentally anything with regard to doctrine and teaching that is at odds with one another in that regard?
Well, I mean, there's obviously different teachings at work, but does it make a difference just in terms of the calendar when Christians choose to celebrate these great feasts?
Oh, I see. No, fundamentally, I don't think there is. The only thing that, at least for me personally, I'm chagrined by the fact that, the fundamental feast day of Christianity, Easter, Pascha, as the East calls it, which is a term which is one of the earliest church terms for Easter. It's unfortunate that even though we're divided, and we should be doctrinally when there are differences between the various communions of Christianity, but nonetheless, it's disconcerting that we can't celebrate the fundamental feast of the church, Easter, on the same day. So, but from the vantage point of, you know, is there anything fundamentally problematic about celebrating on different days? No. Other than the world looks and says, well, you're all Christians, why don't you celebrate this on the same day? And it'd be nice to be able to express that kind of unity with one another if we could celebrate it on the same day.
Well, for the next 2 years.
Yes, we will.
We'll have the luxury of doing that. Dr. Kent Burrison is Assistant Professor of Systematic Theology at Concordia Seminary in St. Louis. Kent, thank you very much for being our guest.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Todd.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend the last half hour of today's program, this Friday afternoon, the 24th of April, getting a scholar's look at the resurrection of Christ, none other than Bishop N.T. Wright, Bishop of Durham in the Church of England, an author of more than 40 books, will be our guest. He's co-authored a new book titled Jesus, the Final Days, What Really Happened. Well, now it makes a difference, and it doesn't it? if all we're talking about is the calendar and the historical accidents and events that brought about a difference in the day that Christians celebrate a certain event, like the resurrection of Jesus Christ, then it really makes no difference. Some people would disagree, but I think from a scriptural view, one day is as another, and we don't stand in judgment over one another as to the day or the times that are celebrated. One day is as another, and if you want to count it as holy, and all days are holy in the Lord, if you want to count it as holy, then count it as holy. But when it comes to the significant differences that lie behind some of those trivial things like calendars, the doctrinal differences, whether they be attributed to the fact that the Eastern Church never dealt with this or that heresy, or the Western Church never dealt with this or that development or historical circumstances, there are still real differences there. Now, I must say that as chagrined as I am that we cannot demonstrate a little more, at least outward, unity in the way we celebrate the most significant event of the church's calendar, the resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ, as chagrined as I am at that, I think we need to hand it to the Western Church and the Eastern Church for not doing what has happened so much in pop American Christianity and mainline Protestant Christianity in the last 200 and 300 years. You know, they have differences, and they stand by their professions. And they, while those differences divide them, they honestly and realistically recognize them. We need more of that in the Christian church. When we come back, Bishop N.T. Wright, a scholar's look at the resurrection of Christ. Stay tuned.
Evangelical and Catholic. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Genesis. Now, has it been replaced? Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Bible Upholding Ministry of Answers in Genesis.
I remember being interviewed on a secular radio station in Bedford, England. The radio host made the following claim. He said, "Surely no one believes Genesis in today's world. We now know this is a myth, and it's been replaced by a scientific view of origins." So I asked, "What scientific view are you talking about?" He replied, "Well, evolution and the Big Bang." I then said, "Actually, when you say this, you're not replacing Genesis with a scientific view in the sense of observable, repeatable science. Molecules to man, evolution, and the Big Bang are beliefs about the past. They're not science." I continued by stating that observational science, like the science of genetics, actually confirms that the Bible's account of origins is true, and it also shows that molecules to man, evolution doesn't work. You know, sadly, many people have been led astray by being told the false view that evolution and the Big Bang were scientific views. Indeed, as our science faculty, holding several doctorate degrees, will tell you, true science supports the Bible.
Are you being led astray by those who claim that global warming is placing our planet in peril? For a balanced view of this controversy, get a copy of our pocket guide on climate change. It's yours for a donation of any size. Call toll-free at 1-888-89-ANSWERS. Or go to our website, answersoffer.org.
Have you heard of the CLCC, the Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission? We're deeply involved in providing seminars to build up Christ's church with education and training for the laity. So far, we've held seminars on confessional topics at churches in Minnesota, Utah, Oregon, and Washington, and planning is underway to hold seminars in several other states coast to coast. Visit theclcc.org. Check us out. Get on the mailing list, or better yet, join us. See how your church can host a seminar, too. Go to theclcc.org.